Hello and welcome to the Inner Gamer episode 166.
Execute order 166, which is basically the same as order 66, but 100 times better.
Weird weekly dose of video game news, reviews, opinions, and discussions made for and by our listeners. My name is Brian Oski.
I'm Awesome Morales.
And I am...
No, I'm sorry. No, I'm Devin Dury.
Don't pull a Travis.
Sorry.
Don't pull a Travis.
Now, today on the Inner Gamer, we play some games. Austin gives us a little bit of a preview into Ni No Kuni 2 as Brett plays Kirby Star Allies and a little bit about PUBG War Mode. Moving on into our gaming news, Lawbreaker Studios is coming out with their own Battle Royale game. Sega Genesis coming to the Switch, only in Japan, unfortunately. Bunch of dicks. Game Collector finds drugs inside of his NES cartridge. And Drake says he'll rap about Fortnite when he gets his own emote. So there's that. Oh. And then on to our discussion. It's all about video game heroes. What makes a good one? What kind of heroes are there? What do we want to see? It's a really good discussion. So with that, please cue... the music.
Hey guys, this is Carolina Rabassa. I do the voice of Sombra, and right now you are listening to The Inner Gamer.
Boop. Hi, this is Charlotte Chung, the voice of D.Va. I play to win, and you're listening to The Inner Gamer podcast. Winky face.
It's Chris Parson here. I'm the voice of Junkrat, and you are listening to The Inner Gamer.
Just remember, it's a perfect day for some mayhem.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Josh Peterzorf. You know me best as Roadhog, the one-man apocalypse. Reminding you, The Inner Gamer, check it out. Amazing podcast. All the guys, class act. The Inner Gamer, whole hog, one-man apocalypse. Yeah.
Yo, it's Johnny Cruz, and you're listening to The Inner Gamer. Ha-ha!
It is April 17th, 2018. Welcome to the Inner Gamer. That sounded really weird to
say. Did you say
that.
Almost 2013? That's what it
yeah,
sounded
I almost
like.
Said 2013.
2013.
It is April 17th, 2018. Welcome to the Inner Gamer podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, we'd love for you to support us on Patreon, like our latest patrons, Jamie and Patty. Thank you very much for donating to our podcast, and we hope you enjoy the content we keep producing. If you have any questions, you know, obviously, let us know. Give us insights and advice on what you think we should
hello at the inner gamer dot net. Hello at the inner gamer dot net. Hello at the inner gamer dot net. What is it, Devin?
Hi at the inner gamer dot net.
Or if you're a Patreon subscriber, you can literally direct message us and it goes to hello at the inner gamer dot net.
Okay,
so
there you go.
That works out really well too. So yeah, thank you for the support, and everybody else that's listening that isn't supporting us, for as little as $12 a year, you can help us get better interviews. We can get more exciting shows coming your way. All of that good stuff. Literally for as little as $12 a year. So there we go. Patreon.com/TheInnerGamer, or you can go to TheInnerGamer.net and click donate to contribute. Let's talk about some video games.
Yes. So,
yeah. We've been playing some games.
We have.
There's not a lot coming
You've
out
been
right
playing
now.
Some games.
Been playing some games. Been playing a lot of PUBG, but I'm not going to talk about that right now.
Yes.
What I am going to talk about is Kirby Star Allies. So that game came out a couple weeks ago. It's a new Kirby game. It's a Nintendo first-party title.
Fully released, right?
Fully released. Okay. It's a $60 game, full price game.
Gah.
I want to preface by saying that it is not worth $60.
Okay.
I'm just going to give it to you right now. This game is a delay.
Sounds like some other games we've played.
Yeah, something like
sea
that.
Sea of Thieves?
No, well, that I love it still. I still, it's
not worth 60
part
bucks.
Of my heart. But anyway, so Kirby Star Allies, new Kirby game, and the premise behind it is that you are Kirby. You are playing a platformer, a side-scrolling platformer. Really beautiful game. The graphics on this are spot on. They're really, really nice, especially on that little the Switch screen. As if you're, well, nobody's watching it because they can't, but Devin's playing on the Switch, and it's just like such a great screen to look at and play on the go, and I love it. But Kirby Star Allies is up to four-player cooperative game. You can play it single-player, but the... the nice thing about it is anybody can just like, you can just snap off your Joy-Cons and have somebody join in and play one of the four characters that you're playing with. So there's you as Kirby, and you can suck in other characters that are enemies in the world and basically inherit their abilities. So I can get the sword guy, and now I suddenly have a sword that I can fight with and do all kinds of special attacks and stuff. And then you can also buff your character that you just sucked in and inherited the ability for with another character that's in your party to make like a super character. So for example, there's like a yo-yo character that you can suck in that you sling a yo-yo out to hit people with, and you can like spiral it around. And then if you have the fire character as one of your buddies, you can harness his ability and make a flamethrower yo-yo that you shoot out and like fight people with and catch them on fire. Or this like,
definitely sounds like your game.
it's got all kinds of crazy hacks like that, and very simple platformer, not much depth to it. The worlds are, like I said, they're very interesting. It's a simple concept. You start out in this world, you go from left to right, you go through doors, it takes you to the next part of the level, and then occasionally you run into bosses and you complete that world. And you navigate through level to level until you get to the end. There's a big boss battle, and then you transport to world number two. I think there's four worlds in the game. The first world I got through in about an hour and a half to 2 hours. So I would say this game is probably roughly a 6 or 7 hour game, give or take. Maybe longer, but from what I'm seeing now, it's probably about that length. I like the mechanics that are here. The thing that I don't like about this game that really bothers me is that, and remember, this is coming from Brett, this isn't coming from anybody else, this game is really easy. Like, there, I could basically just close my eyes and just start pressing buttons, and I could finish the level probably and not really die.
That's pretty bad.
And that's kind of a bummer, because I mean, it would be probably fun with friends, just to like, let's casually get together and just play a little bit of this game and run through some levels and fight some guys and whatnot. But otherwise, I mean, it's just, yeah, you just mash B and attack and roll through people. And really, you can just stand there and let your CPU characters just take out everybody as you're walking through the level.
Wow.
And not really do a whole
lot. Wow.
So,
that's impressive.
Yeah. So, I mean, the CPUs are really good. They're strong, but it's just, there's no depth, like no complexity to it. Like, you know, like some games, like Celeste, for example, you know, you have to have timing right on, you know, different scenarios. And this, like, timing doesn't matter. It's just like when you fight a boss, you just keep slashing at them until they die. And then sometimes they have little things, like I fought a tree boss and he dropped down these apples every once in a while that'll do damage to you, but you kill him really quick and it goes really, I mean, it doesn't take long to take them out. And I was like, well, maybe it's because, I don't know, maybe I'm just really good. And I started reading other reviews.
Maybe
online.
I'm just really good at this.
And then I saw everybody saying that that's the consensus is pretty much the same across the board. So
yeah, I heard the same thing.
Yeah. So I'm kind of bummed that I spent the $60 on it, because I think for 20 or 30, this game is a good buy. Like, it'd be totally worth it. But at the price that it is now, it's not. The time that you have in it is not enough to justify $60, and the difficulty is not enough to justify the $60. So yeah, that's definitely a delay for me. I would hold off on that game until it gets cheaper.
Yes.
If you want a cool little co-op game to play. Like, if you have kids, man, this game would be awesome, because they just sit there and just like hold the button and just like press some stuff. Now, there is like some complexities in, you know, getting taken over an ability and then, you know, remembering what the different buttons are to do those things, but other than that, it's not hard.
But it doesn't sound like that's necessary to beat any kind of level.
No, not necessarily. I mean, you definitely have to get an ability, because like as Kirby standalone, you don't really do a lot of anything.
Well, Kirby never has.
Yeah. So you always have to collect somebody's.
So is Kirby
ability, but
like an offspring of Ditto, the Pokemon.
Kirby was here first.
Yeah.
So it's Ditto and offspring of Kirby.
Yes.
Cool.
Interesting.
Illuminati confirmed.
Oh, God. All right. Well, that took a turn.
Kirbinati.
Oh! You heard it here first. Kirbinati confirmed.
Yeah. So delay. It's good, but not great. And kind of a bummer. I mean,
I'm sorry you paid
$60. First party title that Switch has brought out that I haven't been like overly excited about. Like, even ARMS, right, even though it didn't succeed very well, like I thought that was a great well designed mechanic for the Switch. So yeah.
Yeah.
There we go.
Sorry.
Kirby Star Allies.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I'm still playing it. I'll still play through a little bit.
You devote your time elsewhere, Brett. Just call it a loss and move on.
I know.
Start the Witcher 3.
I just bought Thimbleweed Park, so I probably should play that.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
Very nice. Very nice. I played a game.
Yeah.
Kind of, sort of. I played it. I just haven't played a lot of it. This is more of kind of like my preview of 6 hours of the game. Of Ni No Kuni 2.
Oh, Ni No Kuni.
Yeah. So, what did... I think everyone who's been listening knows I was really excited for this to come out on the Switch, and I was just like, oh, this is the perfect Switch game. I take it with me anywhere. Only on PlayStation 4 right now. I was like, fuck. So I gave in. I got it on the PlayStation 4. And my overall thoughts is, if you don't know anything about this game or haven't played any of the other ones, think twice about getting into it. Because everyone was like, I don't know if you're going to like this game, which... You know, on the surface, I've been playing a little more, you know, JRPGs, and I've been digging them for the most part, but this is one of those ones where it's a little more weird, like very, very weird. The way
it's
the story is set
up. It's very abstract.
Yeah, it's just like, so you start out as the president of like a nation in the current time, and there's an explosion, and you're
Donald
transported... Possibly.
Oh, okay.
And then you're transported to this other world, which is, I guess, Ni No Kuni world. I don't know if that's the actual name of the world. I don't know what Ni No Kuni actually stands for. Like, do you know, Devin?
No.
Anyway, so you get transported to this world, and you are a younger you, and you're dressed up in... You look like a president. It's a suit and tie, and... You meet this kid who is the main protagonist of this world, and you befriend him, and he gets usurped as like the new king about to be initiated to rule this kingdom, and then from that you go on this journey to try to take back your kingdom, and it's all the characters are very weird. Like this is unlike any other game I've ever experienced, and anime, because you know I like anime. Coming into it, very anime. It's almost like Alice in Wonderland, but made by Japanese people.
This has got a very intense cult following.
Yeah,
from its fan base. So like,
it's very interesting.
Yeah, it's the first one. I played a little bit of it. It's super mystical. It's got a lot of really good deep themes to it, like, you know, about loss of family and friendships, and how support can be lent to people who are struggling. And it's just. It's good, but man, do you like? There's some stuff you're like, I don't know if I'm following what's happening here. Yeah. Plus, it's anime, so you know, there's some quirky
it's
shit.
Different anime, different than what I'm used to.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
for
it's,
sure.
It's definitely different.
So, can I give you a sense? The main protagonist is called Evan Petty Whisker Tildrum.
That's cool.
And he is the kingdom of Ding. Will be the king of Ding Dong Dell. Who made that? Who made this up? And then you have these little element things that you use in battle to kind of give you, I guess, the ones I have now, like they spawn a cannon and they shoot at the enemies, and they're called Higgledees. Higgledees. Where are we?
Higgledees.
Right now? Anyway.
It's very much like Alice in Wonderland style name stuff. Like, you know, you might as well be like, where's the Bandersnatch?
So, I mean, for the most part, the game mechanics are pretty straightforward, fairly simple. It's just kind of hack and slash. You go through, you know, cutscenes and stuff, and you get to know characters, and you get to battle, and it's, you just hack and slash. You have these Higgledees that are kind of like your support, and you can activate those guys, and then as you attack, you build up this meter that allows you to do special attacks, and the protagonist, Evan... He has a magic wand, so he can do little magical spells. And then the main guy, or I call him the main guy, but he's kind of the guy you start off with. I forgot his name, but he starts out with the actual pistol. But then as you progress, you get blunderbuss, and you can shoot like with, you know, back and so you go from like present day to like ancient kingdom stuff. You know, kind of medieval, pseudo medieval. So you
it's,
have like
it's,
these
you know,
old, like,
real world to the mystical world kind of a
right.
kind of a theme going on.
Yeah.
I get it.
It's really weird. Not for everybody for sure. So this is one of those games you might want to check out a stream or look on YouTube and see if it's something that you might be interested in. So far, the story isn't that bad. It's actually progressing pretty quickly. I like how it how it does that. And I think it's really interesting for the kind of exploratory mode that you become like a pop looking figure and you have like this kind of like overhead view of like maybe like a StarCraft view, and you walk around and then you and you see like other enemies in this kind of small, I don't even know how to explain it. It's like a smaller version of the world that you're looking at, and then that, and as you see these enemies, you run into them and you engage into a battle. That's how you kind of level up your character, get items and stuff like that. And
sure.
You find other people to interact with, and yeah, there it is.
Awesome. Sounds cool. Do you think you're going to keep going?
Yeah, I'm going to keep going. The story is it's pretty archetypal. So, king trying to take back his kingdom. Very grand, save the world type thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like we'll be discussing in our discussion topic.
Exactly, so, exactly. Cool. Well, this is awesome.
Yeah. You will not like it, Brett.
I know.
You would absolutely hate this.
I don't do JRPGs.
I even think you would hate this too, to some degree. It's just not this.
Hate's a strong word.
Yeah, okay, you're not hate, but it's just like that driving force that most games have these days is not there.
Yeah.
What that is, I can't really define that. But.
Right, right. Cool. Well, Devin, you got anything you want to talk about?
I was the Mad Hatter at Comic-Con.
Yeah, that was pretty sweet.
We missed you.
I loved it.
We missed you.
I know.
It was a lot of fun. I did have like, it was, if anything, I'll just share a quick story about something that I just thought was pretty endearing and fun. I was the Mad Hatter, and it was like this little girl who came up. She was blind, and like her mom was like, she wanted to feel your hat. And I was like, oh, here come the waterworks. And she comes up, she's like, are you the Mad Hatter? And I was like, I was doing a voice, I was in character. I was like, yes, sweetheart, I am. And she's like, can I feel your hat? And like I bent down so she could like feel how big my hat was. And she was like, that's so cool. So I took a picture with her, and it was just a really like fun experience. I didn't expect to be a big hit with as many younger like children and young people than like it was. It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was quite endearing.
I'm gonna bounce something off that. This year for Fan Expo was the first time I actually got to experience the like little kids getting super excited about characters.
Yeah.
Because when we were leaving, we were walking with Joe, and he had his Spider-Man costume on.
Yep.
And these kids were like, Spider-Man, and like almost ran at Joe. And then his mom's like, wait, stop. So like they're like, you know, just shocked at who they were looking at.
That's so cool.
Joe put on his mask, ran over there. It was like, you know, just from afar, he was just like waving, talking to him a little bit, and took a picture with them. But I was like, man, the past 2 years, I haven't seen that. But it's just, I can only imagine being a kid and seeing all these superheroes.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like, super cool. Super cool.
And having kids come up to you like that. It's just
a lot
like,
of kids like, oh my gosh, Alice in Wonderland. What it was so cool. So,
yeah.
There was this, like, this guy, he must have been, he had to be a teenager. He must have been close to like 16, maybe 17 or 18. But he was a young man. I could definitely tell he was autistic because he was so nervous to like talk, but he kept like averting eye contact, and he was saying like, hey, Mad Hatter, hey, Mad Hatter. And he was like telling me jokes, and I was interacting with him and laughing with him. And his dad came up and was the one who was like, would you mind taking a picture with him? You don't have to touch him because he's not, you know, he's not keen on that, but he would like to get a picture with you. And I was like, absolutely, of course. So we stood by, and he put his arm around me, which I was like, oh God, oh, this is big. And his dad was like, oh, that's so cool. And he took a picture. He's like, thank you so much. And I was like, no, of course. And the kid was, you know, see you later, Mad Hatter. And I was like, it's like, as we're walking away, I'm like, oh God. no. So I don't know.
That's cool.
It was just kind of a cool thing that happened that, I don't know, the whole cosplay thing does more good than you think it does when you're
crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You wouldn't expect that. You're just doing something you love.
I was doing something I enjoyed doing, feeding my narcissistic ego, and like here I am, like making some kid's day. So I don't know. It was kind of rewarding.
Badass costume too. Looked really good.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Go to our Instagram and check it out. We have two pictures posted of Devin.
It took for fucking ever.
I can imagine.
When did you get to the con that day?
We got there
before 12.
No, we got before 12. We showed up, I think, at about 11:30, something like that. But I woke up around probably 6 a.m. to like start like getting showered, shaving, getting like my costume.
I was really sad to see you without your beard.
Oh man, yeah, shaving the beard off was tough. tough.
Yeah,
that was not easy. I'm growing it back now, but still, like at the time, I was like
tough. Like it was actually hard to shave.
It was very hard to shave. It was both. It was both physically and emotionally weighing on my shoulders.
No, you should always use like a what was it a quick razor to kind of
yeah
take off the,
yeah.
The,
I took off the majority of the coat.
That's good.
And then used a straight razor, obviously to you know. Get
I made the mistake
finer.
One time of just. just scraping off long strands of beard hair.
No, yeah, I bet that felt fucking great.
That is painful. Oh.
You're pulling hair more than you're actually cutting any off.
Never do that. Ever.
Never do that.
Bad idea. Cool. Well, I was going to talk about PUBG, but I'm going to blow that off.
No, let's talk about it real quick.
You want to?
Yeah, I want to. Yeah.
Keep telling me. I'm just. All right. Real so quick. PUBG War Mode. I played PUBG War Mode. It's another event that PUBG's got going on. This one is the first like change, like big change where normally you're used to like one and done in PUBG. But in this, it's 10v10v10. So there's 30 people on the map, teams of 10. They're fighting each other in a defined circle that you drop into from the plane. It's a very small circle area, and it's just team deathmatch. That's what you're doing. And it's every 40 seconds, there's a spawn. So
drop in,
yeah. So like that's both sides of the team. So like if you die like right at the 40-second mark, you're waiting 40 seconds to spawn in.
Woo!
And then you drop in back over. You pick your landing zone, so you could drop anywhere in that map. There's no defined spawn points, so you could like fall, like be dropping in and look down and be like, oh, there's a bad guy there. Drop in behind them and like shoot them in the back or
right,
whatever.
Right.
And it's intense. Like it totally changes.
Ooh, I really want to play that now.
The game and how like
it's not perfect at by any means.
No. Yeah.
Like it's still pretty PUBG-ish.
PUBG still has like so many flaws they need to fix. Like I was dropping in next to a building and my parachute like didn't get stuck on the building but went away and I'm like just dangling there next to the building. And I should be on the ground, but yeah. I couldn't move.
And someone shot
me. And then I couldn't press F to like unlatch it for a while. So it took like literally a good 30 seconds for me to unlatch as I'm hanging on the side of a building, totally exposed to bad guys. I'm like, come on, guys. Fix this stuff.
So it's a good change of pace. I enjoy it. Yes, it has its flaws, but it's a good change of pace of the sense of you're not having to wait fucking 30 minutes
right.
to get to like the last 10 people to actually shoot someone and then just end up dying without killing anybody. Yeah. This allows you to go in there. It's almost like a training grounds in a way.
Yeah,
you get to go in there, test out some of the guns, you know, get good at that. And which early on for me, and I'm sure it was for you, like it was hard when we got in battle because I never really shot anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
For
yeah.
a good few weeks. I mean, by the time you get to anyone, they've already played so much, and then you just run into them and get mowed down. And I think it adds for a really cool dynamic where they actually have the red drop-in boxes, supply boxes.
Right, the airdrops.
So at first, it's just like one here and there, and obviously they have really good guns in that. And then towards the end, they have two that drop in together, and it takes forever to get down to the ground. Oh, man, it's so annoying. So like it just gives you a chance to really dive in and have this like war front to get these boxes. And then it depends because it's only on
PC.
Well, no, the Russia map.
Oh yeah,
right now.
Your angle or what your angel or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So the different spawn locations all over that map, and it kind of sucks because some of the locations they pick just don't work out very well.
No, they're terrible.
Yeah, and then other ones are like, yeah, if you're used to that area, like one of them was like Watertown and some of that outlying mountain area that's right there. And
oh, yeah, that one was so bad because these guys were like held up in the outlying mountain area and we're inside Watertown and none of us are going after each other. It was just like a stalemate for like the entire time because if we walk out there into the field, we're just going to get mowed down because they got wall cover. It was dumb.
Yeah.
But I think my favorite one was like the farm area. That was pretty cool because it was mostly open. There was like a center city, but then everything else was like you're out in like the field.
Right.
And then I really liked Gorgopol. Outside of Gorgopol was all containers and stuff like that. That was pretty good.
Rajak's nice. I like Rajak.
Yeah, we never played Rajak. But
so you can do it to 10 people, 10 friends. That's the cool part about it. And it's three teams of 10 versus each other. And then you have a meter that you can watch and it shows you who's, if you're in first place, second place. Anyway. So it's good for friends for sure. Other than that, I mean, you can jump in. I jumped in a few ones and
you
know, we won one or two, but You can get chicken dinner that way. You don't have to worry.
Yeah.
Don't be the last one alive.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, we had a team of, we had seven people on Friday night playing, man. 7 out of 10 on our team. And it was, so we only had three public players and stuff like that. And it was a blast.
Yeah.
We're having a good time. So
you got PUBG. It's worth playing. Check it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
For those who don't play Fortnite.
Only on PC. But because they don't have the event, I don't think, on the,
I don't know, actually,
Xbox version.
That makes sense. They're still trying to get Xbox figured out.
Well, they're still trying to get the Xbox to have like all the other maps too. So I didn't realize that they still don't have any of the other maps on
it
either.
God.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
They just have the Russian map on there. They haven't brought
This is literally the Pokemon effect.
Yeah.
Pokemon Go effect.
People are saying that like PUBG Mobile is better optimized than the actual PUBG game. Like, oh,
that's
my God.
Sad.
So bad. Yeah. So bad.
Anyway,
that's going to wrap it up for the games we played. Stay tuned for our video game news.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
It's time for our gaming news. In this segment, we share the best headlines from the week in the gaming industry. First up, we have a follow-up to our last week's article on Lawbreakers being shut down, shuttered, and they're working on a new game that is completely their property. Guess what that game is, guys?
I don't care.
You don't care?
I don't care about this. This is stupid.
Oh, man. So Lawbreakers is making an 80s, or not Lawbreakers, Keyboss Studios, I think is their name. They're making an 80s-infused Battle Royale game show video game called Radical Heights, Boss Key Productions. So this is their game where they have control of the property. It's going to be exclusively reserved to them, all that jazz, and they've been working on it for the last couple months, I guess 5 months. It's going to be free to play. It's out on early access right now, and it's Battle Royale with cheesy, colorful 80s aesthetic, leaning towards a game show element where cash is king. Players will fight for cash and prizes while attempting to kill each other. And then the money you collect carries over from game to game. So like, say you make like $5,000 in one game, the next game you can go and spend $5,000 on a really badass gun and not have to hunt for one in the world and instantly have like a one up on it. So then there's some like stories about like, is it pay to win, blah, 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 but it's not really because it's all, well, right now in-game currency. But you can buy cosmetics from your prize room or put some of that sweet cash in your bank to help buy the weapon in the next match. So you can use it either or. So, what do you guys think about this?
I think it's trying too hard.
Yeah?
Yeah, Cliffy B is trying too hard.
Yeah.
Like, what are we up to now on game Royale?
Six.
Battle Royale? Is that how many you anticipated? Yep.
I anticipated 5.
Oh, so we're over that now.
Yep.
Jeez.
I am sick of Battle Royale games, and Cliffy B has now proved his point that he is out of this goddamn game and needs to stop it.
So the same thing happened last time is like he came out with Lawbreakers at the like end point of that fad, and here we are again, and he's like putting the cap on it. It's like, we should just not do this. Everyone should just stop making these. And they probably will now. I mean, he's the end cap to all this stuff every time.
It's an interesting, I like 80s themed stuff and I like the zaniness of it, but I don't feel like this game concept, like I don't think it's well realized enough.
No.
Like the area that you're fighting in, all that stuff is really cool, but this whole like win cash kind of component.
If I hear the fucking phrase cash is king again, I'm going to lose my shit. Cash is king.
You said it.
Yeah. So, I don't know. The stories have come out. People like the concept a little bit. People that played it. But it's extremely, extremely, extremely buggy, obviously, because it's like brand. They've only been working on it for 5 months. So, it's got a lot of work to be done. But IGN talked about playing it and said that it's got potential, but a lot of issues as well. So, I just don't know how they're... I mean... Yes, it's extremely different from all the other Battle Royale games, but I don't know if it's different in the right way.
Like, right.
Yeah. So we'll see where that goes. But that's Radical
Heights.
How do you
challenge the two?
It's available.
You can't challenge Fortnite and PUBG, you know?
Well, and it's kind of similar aesthetic. I mean, it's not 80s. Like, Fortnite's not 80s, but Fortnite has a similar aesthetic.
And here's the other part about this. You're not even making a game that's much different from Fortnite, because PUBG, yeah, it's more, I don't want to use the term real, but it's a little bit more realistic and it's not as cartoony as Fortnite, right?
Yeah.
Fortnite, it's funny, it's cartoony, it's zany, it's wacky. PUBG, it's not. It's all about that.
Very serious.
Very serious. And you're trying to sit here and do another zany, wacky battle royale game. Fuck off.
Yeah.
You're flooding the market and you need to be spending more time making a game that actually means something instead of this bullshit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because it's crazy how quickly they turn this around. They spend so much time on Lawbreakers and then they just like,
hurry, what can we cash on out now? Super hurry, quick. Go.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising, but
who does he get to do this stuff?
I don't know. I don't know, man. I feel like it's nothing but a bunch of programmers over there probably. Yeah, dude, that sounds fucking wicked.
Yeah, I could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll make a lot of
money. Yeah. Yeah, I'm so about that, bro. Oh my God. Have another monster I could pound? I got to stay up and program this shit, bro.
What if one of them is listening to this podcast right now and they stop listening because of
I don't give a shit.
Come at me, Cliffy B.
Come at me, bro. All right, so that's that.
Seriously, donate to us, people.
Yeah, right. Next story we have is Sega Genesis and Master System games are coming to the Nintendo Switch, but only the Japanese eShop for the Switch currently.
What?
So there's no word yet whether it's going to come out to the West, but games such as Sonic the Hedgehog, Phantasy Star, and Thunder Force 2 are going to be coming to Nintendo's console under the Sega Ages label. So that's going to be at least 15 games coming to the eShop in Japan. So we'll see if we get them coming out this way, but I think that'd be cool to have some Sega games coming out this way.
We could use it.
Yeah.
I'd play it.
I mean, we have Sonic Mania, but that was like a new game.
True.
But
true.
Seeing some of these old Sega games that had some cult followings would be pretty cool. So
yeah.
We'll see what happens with that.
Switching it up.
So I want to talk about Sea of Thieves for a minute here. So Sea of Thieves talk. When
great.
It came out, right, it was we reviewed it and said that I think it's still a great game, but there's not enough content there to like keep you invested and interested in the game. They've been listening to that. So the two people we had on our podcast, we had the design director and executive producer, Joe Need, and Mike Chapman. They brought out a 14-minute video talking about their content schedule for the coming year. And they are listening to the community. They've fixed the main issues that they had with the server problems and whatnot. And now they're looking at future content releases. So every single piece of content they're going to bring out is going to be completely free. It's not going to cost anything extra. So like that $60 is going to get more value over time. And the first thing they're doing is dropping in May, which is going to be, I think it's called the Festering Deep, I believe, the Hungering Deep. It's going to bring out a new AI threat. So like the Kraken that they have now, they're going to have some kind of threat that's supposed to, and they won't say what it is, but it's supposed to make all these crews that are out there that are different crews that may be currently, like, you know, now, like, when we play, we see a crew, and we're like, oh, let's take them out with cannons. Well, this threat is meant to make these other crews work together to take down this enemy, whatever it might be. So,
interesting.
Not sure what it is yet, but that's going to be part of it. And then after that, they're going to start doing weekly events every week that's going to bring exclusive loot that's available to the world if you participate in said event, whatever that event might be. So it may be like special voyages. It may be, you know, just, I don't know, doing, getting on at a certain time to like do these certain types of things, these tasks. They're going to be doing a lot of event-based things that are based around that weekly time period to get you logging back in.
This is the game as a service flaw right here. Yes, it's going to be free content, but it's like, Why not just throw it in there? I feel like that's something that had been. How could you not have developed that ahead of time? Why is that coming out, you know, later? I feel like they've just been holding back. Like, let's see where this goes and see what's going to happen. All right, now here's some more games.
This game was basically an unofficial Kickstarter. Like the content wasn't fully released at its launch, and it's rather than like, I don't know. Yeah. I can't get behind this.
I mean, knowing what they say about. Their plan was that people are going to be creating their own stories in this world with the world they have. My biggest issue with it is that there still has to be pieces in there to allow you, enable you to create those stories in the world. So like I'm working on this article right now. One of the things that I mentioned is that, you know, make exploration rewarding. And that, you know, you go to an island, all these islands are basically the same thing. They have a couple of crates that have bananas, cannons, and planks that you pick up, and then you fight a skeleton or two, and you may see a bottle wash up on the shore. That's the exact same thing you would encounter on every single island, basically. Mm-hmm. But I hear there's caves you can discover. I haven't seen those yet, but like make it to where like everywhere you go, like you really have a reason to explore this island and find something new, whether it be underwater or go up on a hill and like start digging through, and maybe you discover some new space that you can unlock and go into. And then it sends you on a journey and an adventure. And then you create your story based around that little piece of like, maybe like some lore that they've developed into the game. I think those kinds of things will really help. But from what they've said, like, I like the direction they're taking it. Like the fact that they are adding more content, and I understand like they should have had this before, and I think they should have, but I just don't.
No,
I think they wanted to get commentary from people first.
No.
Yeah.
They still could have had that in there. I mean, I think this is just standard stuff we see in games now.
Yeah.
At least the things that they're releasing here. It's just like, why not put that in before? And my thought was we were going to have missions that multiple people go on that you would have to battle it out. Like, okay, I got here first, so I got the chest.
Oh.
And then gotcha. People would come in and be like, oh, well, we need this chest, so we're going to have to kill you for it. You know, that kind of back and forth thing, and then trying to get it to the, you know, objective point to turn it in. It's like you couldn't, you know, that kind of sucks because It's not like that. It's like, oh, I'm going to get this chest. Oh, some random dude who's not on the same quest is just going to take my chest and then, you know.
Or just tag along and then all of a sudden get to reap the benefits of my hard work
right.
of this mission.
Right. It's just now, like
if you guys are doing the voyage together, you do share that gold that you collect. So like if he goes on the voyage with you, like you have to agree on that voyage you're going on. So they do have that system in place that allows you to, like, if you have a random person you meet up with, they have to agree to that voyage to go on that voyage together. I mean, I guess they could go with you and stuff like that, but I don't think they could take the gold chest. I guess they could.
They could.
I guess they could take the gold chest and just like steal it.
Everything is not, I don't know. They said that they wanted that human interaction kind of be like the thing. Well, at least that's what I took away from it.
Yeah.
And I thought they would do more to make that. Because it'd be cool if like, okay, here I found like, you know, quote unquote, a dungeon. It's a cave and I go under, like kind of like a Goonies type thing. And there's like a crash boat from very far, you know, from like the olden whatever. And like special loot or more loot. And then other people come in and it's just like, well, now we have to fight our way out. You know, that'd be cool. Like have these kind of mini matchmaking battles in a way, but
Right. Drive
people to that, which is why I wanted to see. But you know, I guess we can't always get what we want.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, there's potential here, but They definitely need to work on it a little bit. So we'll see where it goes.
Right.
Anyway, A Way Out, the game that we have not played yet. Joseph Ferris co-op game. EA thought had a number of what they thought it was going to sell. Apparently, it has sold more in 2 weeks than they thought it would sell in its entirety of its like lifetime.
Gee, I hope this is a fucking eye-opener for them.
Yeah.
Gee, a game that's got like a story to it and fun gameplay and the things that we can do with other players. Man, who would have thought that was going to be successful?
Wow.
Shocker.
Look at these numbers.
Yeah, so they thought it would sell 203,000 copies in the 28th fiscal year, which ended March 31st, 8 days after the game came out, and 894,000 copies total. But it has sold more in that entire time. So I guess it sold over 894,000 copies already. So that's pretty good. It's a good. I mean, everything I've been hearing about the game, I want to play it. I want us to get in there and play it because it's only like 5 hours long.
I've heard some mixed things about it, but at the same time,
I think it's like a good fun like sit down with your friends and like play through it.
Right.
There's some serious moments in there that they're like, it's kind of weird when you're like goofing off with your friends and then like they have those serious tones that come through. But it sounds like it's just a cool cooperative experience.
Huge win for indie games, and I hope this is a huge eye opener for all these big studios who should have some sort of like, hey, some like indie production type thing where like we'll give you some money, but you're going to our stuff, but it's only going to be like, what is this, $40 or something like that? I don't think it's 60.
No, it's not 60. I think you're right. It's like 40. And then you also, like, if you buy it, you play with a friend. You don't have to buy it, which is really nice. And I found out, like, if you buy the digital download or whatever, basically what you do is you send your friend an invite to play the game with you, and then they get a they have to download the game, and then they can just jump into it. So, like, they download the full game, and they get to play with you because your friend bought it.
That's really cool.
So
this might be the beginning of something special, my friends.
I know. I hope they do more stuff like this.
Yeah.
Like, this would be something that, like, Army of Two could have done. Like,
yes.
That kind of thing. That would have been really, really good to see, because that was a cool co-op game. It's kind of similar, but it's pretty good. All right. Next story we have. This is funny and kind of weird at the same time. There is a game collector that went out and bought some old NES games at a market earlier this month. And when he got back, he found that they were a little bit heavier than he is used to NES game cartridges being, right? So he's like, well, let me unscrew these and see what's inside. Opens it up. He finds it packed with illegal drugs. Ready to go. That's been sitting there for however long. And it sounds like that there was supposedly some kind of thing back in the 80s where there was like a golf related drug smuggling ring that was operating between the US and Europe in the 80s. And this may have been one of those cartridges that
hence why we went
drugs.
Digital. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, then you can't deliver drugs. Yeah. So I just thought that was hilarious. Like, just imagine.
Weird.
Like,
just weird.
What a strange way to smuggle drugs.
Smart. Right?
Yeah.
But really weird.
Man, how do we get these drugs over there? How about this nerdy shit? No one pays attention to that.
No one will ever know. And if they do, then, hey, we just got some gamers high. So there we go.
You got some gamers high.
All set, ready to go.
But some guy's like, damn it, there's my...
I'm going to get really high and play golf. Nintendo golf.
Oh, yeah.
All right, next story.
All right, last thing we have. Drake and Ninja played Twitch again, played some Fortnite. Didn't break any records, but as they were talking and playing the game, they were like, hey, Drake, you have a new album coming out soon. You should like do some raps on Fortnite, said Ninja. And Drake was like, well, yeah, I might do that, but Epic needs to give me the emote, the Hotline Bling emote. Until then, I'm on strike.
Wow. Wow.
Okay.
The way you said that made him look like a dick.
It really did.
No, that's not how I said it. That's how he said it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. This is the exact quote. Someone's going to do it. Someone's going to pull it up. Wait, so he said, dude, you got to put some Fortnite lingo on the album. And so he responded, and he's like, it has to happen. It's just got to be the right way. Someone's going to do it. Someone's going to pull it off. I say when Epic gives me the emote, when Epic gives me the Hotline Bling emote, I'll do it. Until then, I'm on strike.
Okay.
Why?
I don't know.
Why not just rap about what you want to rap about?
Nope. Got to have that emote, bro.
Sex, drugs, and alcohol. No. That's all he raps about. I do like his raps, though. Pretty good.
I guess.
I'd be down with some Fortnite.
Man.
Yeah.
Hotline Bling.
Yeah. Fortnite Bling.
No.
You used to call me on your cell phone.
Oh, well, there it is in Destiny.
Late night when you're playing Fortnite. There you go.
Destiny has it.
So. Destiny has it.
Fortnite has to have it.
Truly, that's Fortnite's hilarious. The next one.
My gosh. So funny. Can you imagine like making a dance that's so corny like that? Just because, and then it became like a
He was high sensation. As a fucking kite when he did that music video.
I was high as a parachute glider in Fortnite.
All right, touche. Should we give him that one?
No.
Okay. I'll be here all night. There you go. Cool. Well, you guys have any other news you want to talk about?
No.
You got it.
You
sure. I guess the only thing that I would just kind of mention that.
All right, so
I
that's mean, it for our video games.
Oh, fucker. Like, have y'all heard about that Fortnite? Like conspiracy theory that's going on right now about the Twisted Towers is about to get hit by a meteor.
What?
No.
So a couple months ago, apparently, in one of the levels of Fortnite, there's like people noticed there was a rumble sensation in their controller when nothing's happening. And they look up and there's this meteor in the sky that's got like this big blue ball and it's got a long tail. It looks like a meteor. Well, one of these players from Reddit actually realized that the rumbling that he's feeling happens at certain time sequences, whether it be day, morning, or night, and at certain altitudes. He's actually broke it down, and it's Morse code. And it's like a it's SOS D4 418, and they've done that as SOS, which is obviously the distress signal. D4, which is right where this Twisted Towers level is, and then 418 is in April 18th. Something's going to happen, and it actually correlates to, if you look at it, because it's supposed to represent a certain actual map somewhere where there actually is on 418 hundreds of years ago. Apparently, there was meteor strikes that happened in this certain area. And like, that's all this huge correlation. Like, I don't know, man. It's freaking bonkers. Like, I read it this morning. And I was like, what the shit is this? And how much time did this guy have on his hands?
How did I miss this? Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah.
And Fortnite. Like, for them to put that in there.
Yeah, for Fortnite to have that in there, of all things.
This is the base game?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. That doesn't make sense to put in a Royale.
That's no, it's in, no, it's in Battle Royale. Twisted Towers.
Okay, yeah, 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 yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes. It's in the Battle Royale. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
what's gonna happen?
I don't know, man. It's 418, so it's
this podcast.
Yeah.
Oh shit!
So who knows, man? Maybe Twisted Towers level is gonna get freaking meteored. I don't know, man. I don't know.
That's weird.
I don't know this news. I just reported.
That's amazing. Okay, well there you have it, folks. There is a conspiracy happening, and you may find out about it tomorrow as you're listening to this podcast. So that's crazy. That like Trump's Drake hardcore right there.
Yeah, screw you, Drake.
Maybe they're gonna drop an asteroid, and inside of it is a pickup for the Hotline Bling email.
No, absolutely not. No,
that'd be crazy. Anyway,
I will be done with video games.
Right? That's gonna be it for the video game or for our news this week. If there's something that we missed, we want to hear from you. Email us at hello@theinnergamer.net, and we'll talk about it next week. Also, if you like what you hear, make sure you give us a review and rating on iTunes. It will help us.
We need the ratings.
Better.
We need it on iTunes. Go to iTunes. Just give us a rating.
If we get a lot of reviews and ratings and stuff like that, we start showing up in searches and everything, like on the front page. Like, that'd be pretty sweet. So you should help us out with that.
If we can get 50 more reviews in 2 weeks, we'll do 50. We'll start a giveaway for a video game. How about that?
We already have that if you donate to us.
I know, but we'll do one
this
for the reviewers.
This one for reviews. Yeah. How about shameless this plug.
If you do it, we'll give you the Hotline Bling Instagram clip meme of the Inner Gamer team.
That,
with a video game.
I don't know if I want to do that. Oh, is this on, worth man. It?
We just like do the little Hotline Bling dance and stuff. It'd be great.
It's okay. We'll give you lots of liquor beforehand.
That's what it would take.
All right. So we're going to take a break, come back with a discussion topic on great video game heroes. So stay tuned and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Hello, everybody. Today we're going to talk about a video game hero. What makes a great video game hero? This is a question that was submitted by our friend and fan of the podcast, David Bond. He asked this question, and I'm going to read it to you because it's very well thought out and developed and everything. So here we go. What makes a great video game hero? What qualities do you look for or don't in video game heroes? Do you prefer a faceless protagonist like the Master Chief or a fully realized character like Booker DeWitt from BioShock? Do you like the incredibly wide variety of character creation options that are offered by games such as WoW, or do you prefer made-and-ready heroes with relatively few customizable options like the characters in Borderlands? Do you prefer recognizable mascot characters like Mario and Luigi, or any characters with little to no brand recognition such as Cuphead? Why or why not? So, that's the premise of what we're going to be talking about today, and let's start with what makes... Like, what do you guys classify as a video game hero? Obviously, it's most likely the main character, but that's not always entirely true. There's several heroes that could exist in a game. So, How would you define a hero in a game?
Well, I think it's just in a traditional sense, the sacrifice of that person. Like, you're doing stuff in order to, for the greater good, most of the time, you know? Very, very traditional. Master Chief.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Master Chief's all about the greater good.
Right.
Yeah.
Saving the world.
He's saving
sacrificing
the
himself. Ready to lay down his life.
So can a hero be somebody that isn't like, you know, most, a lot of games and like just stories in general, like they set up the standard 3-part arc or whatever, where you have a hero and then you have a protagonist that is, the hero is trying to overcome obstacles to reach the climax with the resolution, close that stuff out. Can a hero exist without like
an antagonist?
Without an antagonist.
It'd be really hard to.
Kind of. If he is his own antagonist,
yeah,
then yes, he can. If he embodies both like, hero and antagonist. Like
let's talk for a second.
Booker DeWitt.
I'm already getting like off topic here, but this got me interested on an interesting conversation.
5 minutes in, man.
So Hellblade's newest sacrifice.
Yes.
Like
she is her antagonist.
Yeah, that's in a way like she is the hero.
Well,
the
so you have to then
right?
break it down. If we want to get, you know, from, I know these are video games, but in a lot of ways you kind of have to break these down from a literary standpoint, because the standard literary conflicts that you have is man versus man versus nature, man versus himself, and then
true, yeah,
we're missing one, are we?
Man versus God, maybe.
Man versus man versus nature, man versus
himself.
I'm going to research the hell out of this right now.
So while you look up this last one, yeah. you take these into consideration and then you have to start transposing that onto video games. So in a case like Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice, there was an antagonist, which in this case probably was the man versus God trope, because you're facing Hela, or you're up against Hela because she stole Dillion's soul.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Right.
And she's trying to get it back so she can send it to Valhalla.
I did not realize that this was the fifth one. But so they have man versus man versus nature, man versus society.
Society.
Man
okay.
versus self. And there's also one that's in this list as man versus technology, which I find to be like a 21st century creation.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But in a way, you could think of man versus technology and like
man versus, I think that called up man versus nature in a way.
Yeah.
Or man versus society, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much.
Because technology is nothing more than a societal
creation. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, back to that, can you have a protagonist without an antagonist? I mean, yeah, it's hard to do, but you can. And again, going back to those standard literary conflicts, that's kind of how you can make that happen. Now, from a video game standpoint, that's a little harder.
Right.
You have to really dive in deep into some really... You got to start breaking down into the sub genres, into some really deep themes, and we see that more and more lately. Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice. We see that in What Remains of Edith Finch. We see that in games like Celeste, where there's an antagonist, but it's not the standard boss with the big health bar. It's
a man versus self mentality, really, in that. Like Celeste, and then Gone Home is that way, kind of in a sense.
Yeah, and Celeste, Madeline's trying to battle the depression and the anxiety that she feels on a daily basis.
Right.
What Remains of Edith Finch, Edith is trying to face off against her past.
Yeah.
And wonder if this curse is going to continue on in her family bloodline.
Exactly, yeah. I like the way you worded that. That's good.
Thank you.
Yeah. So coming back to some of the this or that kind of ideas here, let's look at from a hero standpoint. Do we prefer a faceless character or do we prefer a realized character? Now, I feel like this is definitely a personal preference. All of these are more or less personal preferences. But from my perspective, like I think it depends on the game. Like I think there's a place, like I know Borderlands, I feel like that is, even though you pick a character, like once you pick that character, who you are, you become more or less a faceless protagonist in that world. You're the Vault Hunter. You're carrying out these objectives, doing that thing. Master Chief is definitely a faceless character. I like the realized characters in heavy story-based games because of the fact that I have a starting point to work from. There's like a backstory to who, and I'm living vicariously through this person, and I'm like experiencing this world as part of them in a way, so I can, like, I don't know, I guess it gives me something to relate to, Whereas if it's a faceless character, like I can't put myself in the shoes of Master Chief necessarily.
Yeah. You have trouble with these silent protagonists, like Freeman from Half-Life or Master Chief in this case, where you have the story kind of narrated to you and your actions are kind of what generate and progress that narrative, but they don't exactly have a whole lot of impact on it. You can't change it. It's set. Right. I'm not a fan of the faceless protagonist. I think it's kind of an easy out, in my opinion. If you're a developer and you're making a game, take the chance. Make a choice with that character. Make that character. When you have the choice between it, you can make a character, which is fine. People like to make characters, or you have a actual just pre-generated idea for a protagonist, the hero that the player is, you know, emulating. Make that choice. Dive in.
Right.
Make that character. None of that embodies anyone more than I think is Joel from The Last of Us.
Right.
Like, that is a character.
Yeah.
That is a character with hopes, with flaws, crushed dreams, still some dreams left. Make it all the way to the end, and that character made decisions that I don't necessarily agree with. But still, is like that is a bold character decision, and that's a realized character.
Right.
You couldn't even come close to the impact that game had on an individual with a faceless protagonist. It's right. Just not possible.
Well, like, I mean, if you think of games like Mass Effect, I think is one where they do succeed up until Andromeda, where they do succeed at. I mean, you are Commander Shepard. You have a name. But ultimately, Commander Shepard is you as Commander Shepard, whether you're male or female or whatever. But I think what makes that work so well is that you're given choice in how you react to situations. You know, you can say different things and you can basically kind of create that character, just like in Skyrim. You know, Skyrim, you're a faceless character throughout the game you create at the beginning. But like your choices in your dialogue and your actions kind of dictate who that character is. So you have control over that. Whereas like a very heavily narrative driven story game that's got like more focused story points going throughout it, I think you have to have a face or a character that's been developed.
Well, that's what I would say is your difference between those style RPGs and just a standard narrative driven just game, whether it's a shooter or a fantasy, whatever. Because yeah. I mean, you compare Commander Shepard to Master Chief, who's the better protagonist?
Shepard for sure.
Shepard. It's always gonna be Shepard. Yeah.
Well, I'll say
I don't even play those games, and I think Shepard's the better antagonist or protagonist.
I agree.
I think they're both pseudo because they both Morgan Freeman really is a faceless protagonist because he doesn't ever
Gordon
say anything.
Freeman?
Gordon Freeman. I say Morgan Freeman. Same person.
That sweet molasses voice of his can narrate anything he wants to for me.
But Master Chief, like, he actually has. I mean, he's. At the time, he was fully realized to a degree. I mean, he's a soldier. He has his whole background. Like, he's not truly faceless in a sense of character development.
I agree.
And it's just enough for someone to body that person and put their own kind of fling on it if you wanted to. I mean, growing up as that, you know, I grew up on that game and it was fun and stuff. And I'm able to put myself in that body if I wanted, you know. Just matter of speaking, and you know, to feel that kind of power when if you follow Joel, you know, you get to feel his emotions on a different level, and
I think that's also has to deal with part of the scale of the threat. You know, a protagonist is only as good as his antagonist, and in this case, you know, Joel's was much more intimate and much mm-hmm. more heartfelt because it was a very zoomed in, like, you know, the camera's panning into this one individual's experience in this just shithole of a world, while Master Chief's is very much zoomed out, grand scale. We're talking galactic level apocalypse here, not just Earth, but literally the fate of the entire universe.
Right.
So that's one thing to consider when you're thinking of a hero is what's the hero's role, not just the role, but the scale of their role.
Yeah.
How much of an impact are we talking here for this hero?
And on that, like the thing that bothers me about, like right now, Far Cry 5 just came out, and like I talked about in the podcast, how like everybody loved that opening intro to that game and said I was listening to podcasts, people were like, oh yeah, it's such a badass intro, did everything right and stuff like that. The thing that bothers me about that, and I think relates to the fact that I want a realized character, is that I'm not a realized character in Far Cry. Like, I'm this guy that's a junior deputy sheriff, but I don't have a face. I don't have a name. I can make my face or whatever, but like, I don't ever see that.
You're just bad.
Are you called rookie?
Yeah. And the thing that I also don't like about games, which I mean, there's people that argue both ways, but I hate it when I'm interacting with players in the game and they're talking to you, but you never respond back. And I'm like, it's just so weird to have that one-sided conversation.
It's
with
such
people.
An easy out. I'm personally sick of it. I am so tired of the silent character that I'm playing, where I just walk around, I talk to them. Hey, Rook, good work out there. Here's this item to further the plot some more. Good job. I like that you're the strong, silent type. Good job.
I really like how
I cannot roll my eyes hard enough when I hear that. I'm holding the controller. I mean,
that's why I'm not playing. I just kind of stopped playing that at this point.
I didn't think about this until just now, but I like how South Park totally like made fun of that in the Fractured But Whole, because you are the new kid and you have a character and a face throughout the entire game, but they intentionally made it to where you were a mute that doesn't talk, because they're just making a satire on like every video game where nobody ever talks. So they're sitting there, like the two characters are on screen, they're like, hey, new kid, what do you think about this? That's great, new kid. It's like, continue on with the story.
I fucking love them for that reason.
I never even thought about that. But that's exactly what they were doing.
Stupid silent protagonist. I hate it. I hate it.
Did Booker have a voice?
Yeah.
See, that was something that I was thinking it was.
He was voiced by he did.
Yeah, I just forgot.
He did Drake and
Jake's brother, sister.
Drake's. Yeah, I did Drake's sister.
Fuck. What's his name? I'm trying to think of it before you get to it.
Oh, I'm gonna look it up. The technology.
Troy Baker.
Thank you. Yeah, Troy Baker. Yeah.
Nice. You get a prize.
He did so much. He's done the Joker. He's done Joel.
No. You get the mug.
Not the pop.
Great.
That. Booker's dialogue in Bioshock Infinite, like, that is a realized character. Yeah, you don't get to see his face. I don't really care.
But see, yeah, I mean, like, I don't think necessary.
His dialogue was really what sold him. That talking back and forth. The face, meh. But just that interaction that you have with the other characters, that made a face. That was in itself its own face for this character. It gave the character depth, made him two-dimensional and just, Freeman, good to see you.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
why are you holding a bloody crowbar?
It's got to be something powerful. I'm thinking right now, why is that game so powerful? You know, obviously it was great for its time.
Which game?
Half-Life 2.
Okay.
And how it kind of holds up to now. That whole story, the characters involved.
Physics and cool story concept.
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, like, the story's fantastic. The characters that you interact with are fantastic.
Yeah.
But it does suck.
And the
that
physics
you
were amazing during that time. Yeah. Like, I'm moving this 2x4.
Yeah.
I've made a ramp. But no, it was, I mean, the characters were great, but you as the hero, you're Freeman.
Yeah. Like, I had, looking at, let's compare Bioshock to Half-Life. Like, with Half-Life 2, you have Gordon Freeman, who has no voice, mm-mm, and then you have Alex Vance, who I think is such a great side character. Like, she's I loved her character so much. And then you have Bioshock with Booker, and then what the fuck
or
is her name?
Or even before that.
What's the lady's name that you're protecting in Bioshock Infinite? The blue dress. Her,
I know what you're talking about. I don't know her name.
Well, like, she's there.
She's
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth. There you go. Perfect. Yeah. So you have Elizabeth. You have Alex Vance. Both
thanks,
of those
historian
characters. Both of those characters, in a way, like, kind of carry out the same purpose in those, mm-hmm, two stories.
Yeah.
But I loved BioShock so much more looking back on it because of my interaction with
her. Because you had dialogue back with her. Yeah. It wasn't just Freeman, you have to be careful out there. I'm holding a crowbar. If you can't tell, I'm pantomiming holding a crowbar.
He's looking like a soldier.
Yeah, he's one of the English soldiers.
A brain covered bloody crowbar.
Head crab. It's good stuff.
I don't know. I'm kind of trying to make a case for both of them because I mean, they both have their own way of telling a story. It's great to follow someone else's thing, but with the Faceless character, you get to put your own experiences into that to a degree. And I think that's interesting too, because it's more make believe on your end than it is anything else. Yeah,
you can add the imagination into it.
Like, you're like, you know, you read stories, it's in the world, and you're like, oh, how would this character feel about this? I don't know. For me, that's how I kind of.
I can respect that to a point, but I've just gotta have at least some sort of inner, just even if it's inner dialogue.
Yeah.
A perfect example of that was, let's rewind the clock a bit. Let's go back to the 360 and talk about The Darkness. Any of y'all play that one?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I don't know why I was thinking Destiny.
The darkness.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about a good game.
Yeah. Yeah, I played some of that, yes.
Okay, Darkness was great because Jackie had a very cool inner dialogue in his head. And he had a little bit of spoken dialogue, but it was mostly the stuff in his head that was being spoken, voiced by a very creepy voice, but it was still one that like kind of helped you like understand like, oh man, this is must be what Jackie's feeling, or this must be kind of like, is this a reflection of his id, or are we talking about the dark inner personal things that he's thinking, or is this that darkness demon, is that like a temptation thing going on in his head, is that trying to influence him rather than it's like his own personal inner thoughts? So
yeah,
that helped me establish a much deeper connection with that character, even though the game, it was subpar. I mean, not subpar. It was good. It wasn't great by any stretch, but it was still good, and I enjoyed it. But, man, I connected with that character better because of that.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, I don't. I remember playing it. I just don't remember anything about the story. I was like, cool powers!
I'm trying to think of some...
Face-eating snake monster! Yeah. No, he ate hearts. That's what he ate.
Yeah.
He ate the hearts.
Like as much as like one thing, I think one game that I feel does a decent job at handling the faceless character situation is, as much as I hate to say this, but Call of Duty tends to do that just from the fact that
Ramirez, get on that roof.
Yeah. Like you don't say anything necessarily, but the fact that you do interact with the players, I mean, they have like first person where they reach out and grab your hand, like, hey, come on, let's grab you. Like, you're falling down through the, like you feel like you are somebody in that world a little bit. So that helps, but I still want like, I want a face.
Yeah. Younger me enjoyed all of that.
Oh,
I mean, definitely now I would choose someone more like Joel, who is this, you know, two separate people where he wants to be good, but he has to do what he needs to get done and, you know, save the world. I mean, it's all save the world, but...
But is it save the world? Because in the end, Joel doesn't save the world.
I know, but it's still there.
Hey, everyone, spoiler alert for some video games we're about to talk about.
Side note, I kind of want to go buy that again and play it.
What, Last of Us?
Yeah, because I didn't finish it yet. Oh, yeah, I'm going to do that.
Well, actually, anyway. I still need to... I know, right?
I do not like the game mechanics.
It's okay.
It's very dated.
You can. Well, yeah, so is Nathan Drake Collection, but I powered through that shit. And it was
I powered through that shit, too. It was
so
hard.
So good.
I know. We've been over this. Have we? I don't know.
Yeah, no, we have.
I'm going to go ahead and reiterate. Finish that game.
No, I've seen all the cutscenes.
Ah, son of a bitch.
I just could. So, okay, I could not stand them anyway.
So this is interesting thought on the same video game character and everything. So I was listening to Corey Barlog, the design director of God of War, and he was talking about the game. And one thing that he said is like a last parting wish of people is he was like, whatever you do, like, not saying that, hey, I want you to go out and buy my game, but this is a game that is meant to be played, not watched. So do not go and watch this game on Twitch. Do not go and watch video recaps of it. He was like, we built this game to have the story partially. I mean, you have to play this to get the experience that you need out of the game.
Understandable.
I'm very glad to hear that.
Yeah, I was really glad for him to say that because like everybody nowadays, like, let's just go to YouTube and we'll just watch
a stream of it.
And I'm like, I don't know, with the, some of these games, like you really have to get your, like, I would never have gone back and watched like BioShock or anything like that through video. Like that game had to be played because those experiences,
yeah.
like
oh, yeah.
stalking the big daddies and like tracking them down and finding the little sisters and all that stuff. Like that's such,
I mean, I think it's more of a younger generation type thing.
Yeah.
Not even just say younger generation, just younger people. Like I get that to a degree, but obviously us being older, like there's something about diving into a game, figuring out that character, his ins and outs, and then you know, even replaying the game and being like, oh, I didn't notice that before, and then digging in deeper with all this, the lore that's around the world and piecing this world together when, you know, as a child, yeah. that you're not so much about that. You're more of like, yeah, let's have fun, explosions, magical
ironically,
babe,
like, I feel like I spent more time doing that when I was a kid than, like, I'm like one of the weird ones, but like, I spent, like, when I played Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3, I literally read every single codex,
man.
Like, all those codexes, you know, that popped up as you discovered, like, a ship or, like, a character or whatever. I read every single one of those things.
I just set us up to be, like, really deep, methodical, like, yeah, we love the world, shit. I don't know what I'm saying, but
I don't know either.
You destroyed
it. Like even with Assassin's Creed, like when Assassin's Creed came out, you know how like whenever you discovered a building that was a historical building or whatever, they had these little like snippets of information that you could learn about the history of that. I read every.
That would have been great if it was integrated into the gameplay.
It was. This was. Well, sort. I mean, okay, sort of, but yeah.
We're getting off topic.
Codex wasn't, but yeah.
So here, I'll throw in a weird question. Okay, let's think about the games. Some of these characters are in, and like let's go with Assassin's Creed. Can we do a faceless character with that and still get the same the
yes.
general like
yeah I see
yes because I didn't give a shit about any of the assassins that I played in any
you
of
like
games.
Ezio
really?
No
Ezio was amazing.
Dude, Ezio was the shit.
Yeah, he was awesome. He was like this he was guy. Like older attractive me.
I think Ezio is really good. I agree with some of the other characters. They weren't as good.
I mean,
like
Morgan Freeman. Could we have like Gordon done a Freeman. Third person? Sorry.
Ezio was okay, but like I just.
Can we do a first person Assassin's Creed? Faceless man. Doesn't say anything. Assassin.
The Assassins.
Yeah, I think Assassin's Creed would be okay without it, but I did like. And in the Ezio trilogy, I think they needed a face to that. With. Like Connor, for example, in Assassin's Creed 3, I felt like was way too much. Like it was good. I'm glad it existed. I think Assassin's Creed like would not be as good of a game if it didn't have that. Because if you look at like the gameplay scenarios, like
yeah,
like Altair in Assassin's Creed 1, the gameplay in Assassin's Creed 1 was really repetitive, but I was really invested in that story, and I was really invested in Altair's like part of that world of the Templar, like. I like fell in love with that world. I really did. Like, I really got into it hardcore. So
Mass Effect.
I don't know. Mass Effect I think is good as is. I don't think a defined character in Mass Effect would be good for that because it's
more
all
think
about
it,
choice. You know,
the more of these stories are like all the same, like truly all the same.
Yeah,
I mean it's just a different
Imagine
way
that,
of telling
all
it.
All these games are also made by a certain one company.
Yeah, Ubisoft.
Right, yeah. So let's talk. Well,
I think of Mass Effect too. Like, what if it was just faceless? Because, like, you know, Bloodborne and Dark Souls are just like, oh yeah, make your character the way you want to, but you never get to see their face again.
Right? Yeah, you can.
Well, I mean, you could, but it doesn't.
You don't.
Like,
you don't hear them speak any dialogue. No. But
well, it's third person though, right? Dark Souls is third person.
Well, yeah, but you put you know armor on, you just don't see anymore.
Yeah. Well, like somebody was arguing about the or making a point about Sea of Thieves, and like I mean, this is on the character customization part of it, but Sea of Thieves, like you randomly generate a character, right? And then you buy like all these like outfits for your character, but you never ever see who you are. So like everybody else can see who you are, but you don't get to see who you are. So like I think in Sea of Thieves, something that makes the game really good, I feel like Sea of Thieves would be a good third person game. What do you think? Do you think that would?
I think
it'd
still work.
I think it would be a great third-person game. You could just like flip to third-person. You can always see what your character looks like. You can make your character you. You can be the legend that you want to be and see that. And they don't have that ability, and it really frustrates me because, like, why would you have a character that you can't see in this
right.
situation? It's all about you as the character making your story in this world. Let me see myself.
Or at least give it the option of something like Fallout where you can be in first person
yeah, exactly.
and never see yourself or
yeah I'd say flip back and forth kind of thing
flip back to third person
yeah.
you can see that beautiful beautiful blue and white jumpsuit
hell yeah
blue and white blue and yellow jumpsuit
yeah exactly So wait, I want to talk about the other part of this question that he had, which was recognizable characters and no recognition, or recognizable characters versus not. And the thing that about this,
what does that mean?
Question. So he was saying, like, do you prefer characters like Mario and Luigi that are like well-established characters, or brand new characters like Cuphead? But every character had to start as an unrecognized character anyway. Like Mario at one point was an unknown character, right? Mm. And then over time developed into something. But I mean, like say a game came out, like let's look at Mario plus Rabbids. Like would that game have been as good if it wasn't for Mario being the main character of that game? Or did that help kind of push that game forward to another level by having Mario in it versus just a standard character?
Yeah, Mario definitely helped it. I mean, in general, I think a lot of these characters have certain archetypal builds physically that automatically that already trigger you to certain things. Master Chief, BJ Blazkowicz, like you see those guys and you're like, I know exactly what I'm getting into, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, you see Joel, I mean, the way he looks and his, you know, in the post-apocalypticness, like you kind of, I don't know, it kind of already helps build all that. I don't know if that's what he's talking about or not.
Well, just like, recognizable characters. I mean, there's...
Are you talking about Link?
Well, yeah. Mario? I mean, there's stuff. There's, you know, if we're talking about, like, from a franchise standpoint, yeah, branding is everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you've got iconic heroes that are always going to be ones that we're endeared to. Link is a prime example. Everyone knows Link. Everyone knows what Link has. The green tunic and hat is very recognizable. The Master Sword, the Link shot, or the hook shot, whatever. Like, it's... It's all something we all know.
Yeah.
And that works to a point, but it can get repetitive and it can get a bit overdone, which is why I think Breath of the Wild was such a breath of fresh air, because damn, did he need to look different? Damn it all, if he didn't need to look and feel like a different character altogether.
Yeah.
As well as the world of Hyrule.
Still voiceless.
Voiceless, yes, but a much better Link.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He's like, oh, doesn't say anything.
Oh.
I like how. Yeah. And I'm trying to remember what her name is.
What? Hit. What?
Zoe.
No. Yeah. Is it Zoe?
No. It's
Lost
not.
Legacy.
Yeah.
No.
Maybe.
It's not Zoe. Chloe.
Chloe.
Yeah. Close. So I. So, like, this is an interesting, this is part of that conversation, but, like, you know, Uncharted as a series could have kept going with Nathan Drake for eternity, right? But then they made the conscious decision of, like, let's end his story and then open it up with different characters. So then we got to see it through Chloe's eyes. And I think that was such a great move to keep that storyline, that world they built going, but not make it eventually get stale. Because like, I mean, Zelda, like Nintendo does a good job with Link and changing him up enough to where, and then there's enough time between the games coming out that doesn't get old and, you know, like you get tired of playing Link or whatever. But with Uncharted, like that story, like Nathan Drake's story was getting worn out. So let's introduce a new character and go through their storyline. Still in the same world, but you can see it from a different perspective. I think there's times where that's definitely necessary to bring in that new brand, build a new character that needs a refresh and new eyes and stuff.
God,
like
you know
that.
Who needs it?
Who?
Samus Aran.
Oh yeah,
that's one who needs a.
It's coming.
Needs a refresh.
It's coming.
Needs tune up.
Oh yeah, for sure. So we'll see. We'll see how that game comes out.
Oh yes.
Anyway, so last question then, so we can wrap this up. Favorite video game hero. It doesn't have to be like the all-time favorite, because it's like that's a loaded question.
Devin's done.
Like, what would you consider your favorite video game hero or one of your most?
Yeah, I would
respected,
say a favorite.
Yeah, a favorite. Yeah. If you want to throw a second one in there, like a runner-up or like a twofer, like go for it.
I need a minute. I'm still debating in my head about like which one.
Yeah, I got two or three.
Or five.
I have three.
I'll say two. I'll say two because they're more unique, I feel like. Joel, for sure, from The Last of Us, and BJ Blazkowicz.
Okay.
Joel, because he had to make actual real human decisions, and it was to the point where no matter what he did, like, it was just going to be, he had to face those outcomes, you know?
Right.
And he had a hard life. And, like, you feel that. Like, it's very human. That's why, yeah. like, it's very human. And then BJ Blazkowicz, also very human, but he's kind of like that all-American hero that you wish you could be
yeah.
to a certain degree. And he's just that archetypal, strong dude. Yeah.
He's a likable, he's kind of like a Nathan Drake of that world in a way. Like, he's,
right.
he's this guy that is, has such, yeah, he's got character that you really respect.
He's right. such a more, I think, realistic version of what we would consider to be like a modern day Captain America minus yeah. the serum.
Right. Yeah.
Just wholesome in what he believes and very dedicated, tenacious, very convicted in his beliefs and does what's right in a very gruesome manner, like stabbing Nazis in the head with just a visceral strike, but
right.
still amazing.
Right.
Right.
That's good.
Thanks.
Good choice.
Follow Shit. Up. Follow up, man.
What you got? I'm going to do two as well, just because I have to.
You have two or you have to?
I have two.
Both.
And I have to. I have to have two. My first one is going to be one of, I guess you would probably call him faceless. We kind of talked about it earlier on a live stream, but it's going to be the Chosen Undead from Dark mm-hmm. Souls. The character is silent, but the character is also fully realized by your very actions in this world. It's dying. It's failing. You have to step up, and you're essentially given this destiny of a choice of link the flame or let the fires die out. And through your adventuring and playing, you can discover all of it. It all comes to a head at this one singular point in the future. And that's where you make this choice. And this hero, it's not a cut and dry black versus white, good versus evil. There is some very ambiguous tones to this hero that is linking the fire, the good ending, or is letting it die out, the good ending. And I fucking love that.
Awesome.
It's like a good hero.
Number
Thanks.
Two.
Yeah.
The number two, I will say, is the perfect marriage of RPG and very heavily narrative driven story, which completes the perfect marriage of your customization into how this character behaves and their journey throughout the game. And that is going to be Geralt from Witcher.
Nice. That's a good one.
He was on the list.
He is the perfect embodiment of a hero that I get to play and I get to make decisions on, but who is also fully realized and who already has a history that is realized that you know about, that you have witnessed for two games prior. So, yeah.
It's another good game I need to play again.
Yeah.
I just need to play that.
I don't have another 200 hours to sink into Witcher.
Yeah.
Yeah, gosh. I do.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, I do.
I'm going to sink all Stop that into Celeste. Cyberpunk. It's going to happen.
Oh.
All right.
Anyway, Brett.
Mine. I changed it last minute.
I bet you did.
The driver from Need for Speed.
Yes. No. Mine is going to be the Chomper from Super Mario. I'm just kidding.
Please, okay, I want to hear more.
What the shit, man?
No, seriously. In all seriousness, mine is John Marston. That's who I'm going to go with.
Ooh.
From Red Dead Redemption.
Mm.
I was like, wait, who do I want? Who do I like as a hero who is also like a bad guy in a way, but like he
an
is
anti-hero.
Such a good, yeah,
he's an anti-hero.
Totally anti-hero. And he's a good example of like why it's so important to have a face to a character mm-hmm. in a game, to a hero. And
very iconic
gosh.
Face, the yeah. three gadgets across his
iconic
face, so it's
face.
Easily identifiable.
He's got that
got
voice.
Branding, got
he
the
had
voice.
Such a strong conviction for what mm-hmm. he was like, reasoning mm-hmm. for what he was doing. And then the way that game ended, and like you were like, it kind of has the same, like, I feel
bittersweet.
I had the same relation. I mean, it's ironic that it's like Western kind of in both of them, but like when the first season of Westworld ended, I kind of felt the same like cringe in my body that I got from Red Dead Redemption when that ended. It's like, damn, that was good storytelling. That was fantastic. So
I would like to see a remastered of that.
Yeah. I hope they, I think they said they brought it out 4K with the Xbox backwards compatibility or something like that just recently. I'm pretty sure.
Devin.
Yeah.
Historian.
Anyway. Yeah, right.
Damn it.
I don't know. Sorry. So there don't have an answer.
That's our discussion. We need to wrap it up. We went a little longer than I thought we were going to.
Yeah, yeah.
But
we could go longer.
That was good. So that's going to conclude our discussion topic this week. If there's a topic you want to hear us talk about, please let us know at hello@theinnergamer.net. As I mentioned at the beginning of this talk, that this was a community-submitted question from David. So thank you very much, David, for the question. Super awesome conversation, definitely. Don't forget to check out the video of this segment every Thursday at youtube.com/theinnergamer.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Looking forward to next week, let's talk about our upcoming video game releases. On April 20th, we have two exciting announcements. The one that we're probably all most excited about is Nintendo Labo on the Nintendo Switch. That is the cardboard creation of awesomeness where you can make your own fishing poles and pianos and stuff. Who am I kidding? God of War is coming out on the 20th, guys. God of War on the PlayStation 4. It is finally here. We are getting it. It has arrived. The epic of God of War.
I will be playing the literal.
Yeah.
This out of all.
We're playing the shit out of this game.
It's going to be crazy. So I think it's safe to say that everybody is going to be not buying the Labo on day one and probably buying God of War on day
one. So you remember that April Fool's trailer with Final Fantasy? And they were
Final
making
Fantasy Go.
Yeah, Final Fantasy Go. That's Nintendo Labo.
Yeah.
Except they took out the G and put a B.
Apparently it's pretty good. I've been hearing reviews of people talking about it. I mean, it's obviously not for like adult people like us. I mean, maybe
not
it
for
is,
adults.
But
I don't think it's for kids either.
I think kids are really going to get into it. I think it'll be
until they destroy their cardboard.
Apparently, it's pretty like structurally sound.
I was like, not to knock it, but I mean, there is some pretty sound cardboard shit I've seen people make.
I think it'll be pretty.
You've seen cosplayers?
Yeah,
they do amazing shit with cardboard.
And kids are pretty good about stuff. I mean, they're not. You got to give them more credit, man.
They're
not that bad.
As a kid, it was bad.
Well, as a kid, yes, you're a pyromaniac.
But then again, I ran around with knives and hammers.
I'm talking about a child, not a kid.
Yeah, same difference.
Children. the children who play with Legos and stuff, who can actually rebuild their things, this will be destroyed.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Also, on April 24th, we have Adventure Time Pirates of the Incredionium. PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Incredion.
Cool. Also on the 24th, we have South Park's Fractured But Whole coming out to the Switch.
Woo!
So if you didn't get to play that, or if you have a Switch and just want to play it on your Switch, you can play South Park Fractured But Whole.
Switch.
Very nice. Which is a good device to play.
Very nice.
Yeah. So that is going to wrap up our show this week. Be sure and check us out next Tuesday for more from your favorite video game podcast. Visit theinnergamer.net for our latest episodes, blogs, videos, and social channels. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on iTunes or tell a friend.
We also have a Patreon, which is a way for you to give us money. Okay, not just give us money, but you can donate money to us for us to do stuff. This stuff is the stuff that you want to see. It's great stuff, high quality stuff, the best stuff. Some would even say the greatest stuff.
Greatest of stuff.
The greatest of stuff. No, seriously, it's you can either do like $1 a month, you can do one-time donations, you can do up to even like $10,000 a month. Is that a fair? Do we have that tier?
Yep.
Do we have $10,000 a
God
month?
God tier. You become God.
Yeah.
unlock God mode with that one.
Yeah.
But if you do support us, we do have rewards waiting for you, such as being a guest here on the podcast. You can submit discussion topics for us. You can join our Discord channel and play video games with us. So there's a lot of really cool stuff for you to enjoy. So go over to theinnergamer.net and click donate to contribute. My name is Devin Dury.
I'm Austin Morales.
I'm Brayden Oski.
And you've been listening to
The Inner Gamer! I forgot that Luis wasn't here.
I know.
I think he's hungover.
He is.
Maybe. Possibly.